This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and not one, not two, but three special guests today, two of whom are artist Donna Jones, MBE, and Joanna Corey. And we also have back in the studio Tom Jackson, who was recently on the 4Ps programme here. So, welcome all. And Donna, if you could start, we're doing a show, aren't we, for Vectis Radio for the FM appeal, and we're fundraising this Thursday on the 26th.
It is the 26th.
Yeah, so it's rushed around very quickly.
Gosh, I can't believe it, Joanie. Yes. We've not even had a rehearsal. What's the matter with you?
It's at the Riverside Centre. And it's a fiver a pop, and that all of that money will go towards the Vectis Radio FM appeal. And the reason this is a really good cause and really important is because Vectis Radio is the island's community station.
It is.
And part of that offer, so we help lots of people, including good causes, and give the chance for people with all abilities to present on radio. And Tom Jackson, welcome.
Hello.
And I think you've been doing this for the last week, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Came in on Monday, no idea what to expect, and I've really enjoyed the week, actually. Yeah.
Brilliant. So 4Ps, for those people who have not heard of it, the 4Ps project, that stands for Presenting, Production, Promotion and Podcasting, and that's free of charge to 11 to 19 year olds. That's a fantastic opportunity, isn't it?
It is a really great opportunity, because it does cover all bases when it comes to radio, and it's kind of something that is very good, and that's where my train of thought ended. I should probably have expanded that a bit more, but
career on radio, yeah. Beckons. I should also say that it's free of charge for 11 to 19 year olds and up to 25 year olds with those with additional needs. So how do you feel it's helped boost your communication and your confidence, Tom?
Well, I came in and I was stuttering as I was just a minute before. I was kind of not quite sure when to say something and what to say. But now I can talk rubbish for hours.
Right, well, it's done its job then. So what are you currently doing?
Currently, yeah. I am sitting here. And I'm getting ready for all my GCSE exams in school, so that's what I got to look forward to.
Wow!
After the weekend,
you look so much older than that. So, what, you're hoping, presumably, for a career in broadcasting, or was this just a confidence booster?
No, I am hoping to go into the media in some way, because it is something that I really get fired up about and would love to pursue in the future.
Okay, so what tales have you got of working with Ian Mack, the station manager?
Oh well, it's really great. And something
well
that
said,
I,
well said.
Yeah, it's really great. Frosties.
Yeah.
I seem to be very good at producing kind of promo things. I've recorded a number of news bulletins and stuff like that, and it's a skill that I didn't know I had.
Well, isn't that lovely to discover something like that? So ultimately, would you prefer to be behind the scenes, that are more techie, or up front presenting?
I think probably upfront presenting is where I'm kind of pointing, but
brilliant.
Who knows what's going to happen.
That's fantastic. So from here on, what's the next sort of thing you do in terms of training?
I am invited to maybe pop back in at some point, maybe if I have an idea, which is the hard bit, and potentially get more involved in Vectis Radio. So that's the plan.
Yeah, I'm sure you can just come in, hang out, learn more, you know, pick up little tricks of the trade. I think we'd all be delighted to see you. In fact, have you got a really techie head?
A little bit.
Yeah. You see, you're the kind of guy I need in my life permanently. Or just sat around this side of the desk, because this is an anathema to me. I've just about got it as simplified as I possibly can. Ian has made it dead easy for me. But somebody like you would be an absolute boon. So it's lovely that you've come in, and thank you so much.
That's
it's
right.
Been great. So please hang around and keep coming in, keep learning. Yeah. So just one last thing, one message to anybody that might be listening that thinks, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure if I'm confident enough, can I do this? You know, what would you say to them?
I'd say that put all your kind of worries to the side, just go ahead and do it, because it is an amazing opportunity, and it provides you with so much that you can take forward and use.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you. And will you be coming to our show on Thursday, the 26th of January at 7 o'clock, Tom?
I will need to check my diary.
Okie dokie. Look forward to seeing you in the front row then. So that's just part of the reason why it's so important that now we've been granted this licence to go FM this year, that we can raise these funds, which is £10,000, which is quite a lot of money, but we're getting there, aren't we? So, Donna, what are you looking forward to most about Thursday?
You and I have such a laugh when we do it.
Yeah, and hopefully the audience does too.
Well, you know, they're part of it. Usually we end up laughing at the audience. And they end up laughing at us.
At us, it probably so, in all the wrong way.
Yes. And obviously some of the stories that we tell, I love hearing your stories about your mum and about Sophie, which are really, really funny. And do you know what? Sometimes the thing that I don't expect is the audience reaction. You expect a certain response to certain things, but if the audience is actually going with you, it lifts me, and the whole atmosphere of the place becomes not electric, but it's funny, and there's a buzz, and there's a rapport that happens between you and the audience that you don't write in.
It's that bit
as
of magic.
A sketch. It's the X Factor, isn't it? It's the magic that we do.
Because I think for me, the audience are over half the show.
Absolutely.
Because if, like you say, if they're with you, then the whole thing goes up a grade, doesn't it?
I think. It absolutely does. I mean, the first two that we did, which sold out, I have to say, and we were shocked, weren't we? We were surprised, but lovely, you know, it was fantastic. The audience were sort of like really with us and, you know, making comments as we were sort of doing our sketches and things, and obviously wanted to be part of it rather than sitting there and doing a critique of us.
Oh, yes. It was their crocheting.
Well, there was one chap reading about getting a job. Do you remember that? And as I walked in, so I picked up on that and, you know, asked people to feel sorry for him and to get him a job. And there were lots of things like that, that, you know, there was that kind of banter that we would call it. Yeah. And lots of little jokes and things like that we'd not anticipated.
Yeah, it was nice. And it was a couple of the reviews here. No, I shouldn't read out your own reviews.
Oh, go on.
Hey,
go on.
Funny yet poignant.
That must have been your bit.
Well, the point, maybe the
point.
Yeah,
the poignant bit.
Yeah, and your bit was the funny. Full of wit and glamour.
That's you.
Okie dokie.
Keep going.
We touched on profound issues.
Oh, that was me.
That sounds very rude. Sounds very, very, very rude. And fabulously funny females.
That's
nice.
Both of us then.
How much
isn't
did
it?
We pay for that?
Well, it was Dom, wasn't it? Was it our friend Dom?
No, that was the Ventnor Fringe.
Oh, okay, okay.
And well, somebody used the word brilliant.
Well, on that basis, good. They have to invite us back this year.
I hope so. I think that would be lovely. But right now, what we want everybody to come, please, it's just a fiver to come along on Thursday the 26th at 7 o'clock at the Riverside Centre. The bar's open. We're going to be there. I think the whole of Isle of Wight's going to be there, aren't they? Anyone.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, there's no, you know, American inauguration, so everybody will be coming to our show, won't they? Because, you know.
But we promised Donald Trump won't be there.
No.
So that must be good enough reason to get the hordes in.
Did you get asked?
Of course I got asked.
Yeah, did you? Okay.
Yeah, we've got the same hair.
Yeah, precisely. So obviously this is a priority. I didn't get asked, I'm not quite sure. But I'll have a word with him later, right? I'm not frightened of him.
Well, you went to Obama's, so you can't.
I did. I'm not frightened of Donald.
Oh, my goodness me. What a turning point for the world.
Well, let's hope the world keeps turning.
Yes.
That's
yes,
my
indeed.
Worry.
Indeed. Even my husband's slightly worried, and you know how laid back he is.
Comatose.
Dougie boy, yeah.
Dougie's comatose.
Horizontal. Yes. just not caring. What, love? What? What?
Can I just ask a question? Did you finish that job with my brother doing the shed?
Well, I mean, we're talking that this is all very loose, isn't it, Donna? Very loose.
Not as far as my brother's concerned. My brother is very down to, you know, is an exceptional character. He's a professional, he's a perfectionist. And he came to Joni's house to help Dougie Boy do the shed.
Well, yeah, I know. He's a professional through and through. And he came in his vest in that really cold
winter.
Weather.
That's Daryl.
just remarkable. But there's Doug, who was his little helper. I think. Shall we say his little lackey, little helper?
Elf, the little
elf. Christmas elf. Christmas elf, but a bit late. He was even late for that, so he wasn't quite the Christmas elf.
Okay.
So he was doing the tea, making ham sandwiches, getting special ham in for him, special rolls.
Well, Daryl would love that.
Yeah, Daryl and ginger nuts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Daryl would be very happy.
But I could see when I went out there that Daryl was slightly exasperated. You know, just slightly exasperated.
Just slightly.
Because Doug is just not quite as on it as he should have been.
But
a little bit of a nuisance, I'd say. A bit like having a very small child out there. You know, just letting him hold one very safe tool.
But one tool?
Yeah, nothing more than that, though.
Okay. But my question is, has Doug now started to walk around in just in shorts and T-shirt? You know, in the middle of winter, like my brother does?
Oh, yes, he was doing that anyway, so that was a good excuse, little partner crumb. But he's got a bit more of a swagger, you know. And probably taking up having a sly fag behind the shed, you know.
And is he still, is he wearing one of those, you know,
tool belt? Yeah,
with all his, you know, and ruler and
and
protractor, pencil
behind the ear.
Yeah, we love you, Dougie boy.
So that's what's going on in our house. But more importantly, we've got two artists here. So the studio is kind of filled with all this lovely creativity, which is brilliant. So can I bring you in now, Joanna? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I've just been trying to laugh really, really quietly while you two are talking.
But we're both delighted to have you here because you've got a very special, well, phenomenal exhibition at the Key Arts, haven't you?
Oh, that's really kind of you to describe it. It is phenomenal and special for me in particular because it's a solo show, which I was really fortunate to be offered. I entered the Key Arts Open Art Biennial competition and really was quite overwhelmed to be offered the solo show as a result of that. And it was just a fabulous opportunity because up until then, I have had shows before, but the West Gallery in Key Arts is a particularly fabulous space. Oh. It's really large, it's really atmospheric, it's incredibly versatile. It's got lots and lots of possibilities, not just visually, but also, as Paul Armfield has been finding out and using a lot, it's got really good acoustics. Mm. So you have a genuine possibilities of making all sorts of kinds of creative work in there. And I was given a year and a half to prepare for it, which was needed because it is a large space, but it was just fabulous. I'm not.
But in that year and a half, presumably you weren't just making work for this exhibition, were you? You would be doing other things. Yeah.
I am, you know, average working woman.
Nothing average about you, Joanna.
No.
Well, like a lot of women, you know, I have to juggle a whole number of things. I'm a mum of a 15-year-old. That's a really important thing in my life. And also, I contribute significantly to the household income. So I actually am a digital learning specialist, which I've been doing for the last 20 years. So I take on all sorts of clients and contracts and work with all sorts of people, actually, within the corporate sphere.
So I'm sitting here in total awe of you. Because you must have one of those brains where your left and right hand is going equally fast.
That's a really interesting thing that you said, because I trained as a fine artist for about 7 years. I did my degree at Oxford in fine art and then went on to the Royal College of Art to do photography and got into animation. And then when I came out, and this is giving away my age here, but I don't mind, I got out of the Royal College around 1994.
None of us can do the sums.
No.
Fine.
No.
And I thought computers, these are really interesting. I think they might enable me to actually make all sorts of animation work by myself instead of having to need a technician and lots of equipment.
Oh, that's just how I think, Joanna.
And when I started using software and learning about it, which I was very nervous, I remember being terrified of touching the mouse because I thought the computer was going to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's going to sound really strange.
No, I'm still at that stage. Still at that stage.
And after about a couple of months of training myself on the software, which I wanted to make some animations with, I suddenly felt that my brain was more in balance. It did actually physically feel like that.
Wow.
So I fell in love with technology completely because I just saw it in a way as another kind of paintbrush or
another tool,
or another medium or a tool, and that's the way I've always approached it.
So were you always good at maths and science at school?
I wouldn't say I was good. I was very, very lucky that I had a really quite an amazing maths teacher when I was doing my O-levels, which is GCSEs for you, Tom. And she was a really creative visual mathematician. And I remember her teaching us about simultaneous equations being like oranges, apples and elephants. And I just remember her telling us all sorts of amazing... I remember amazing lessons with her and, you know, making maths really quite extraordinary. And it was all about patterns and things. And I was just think I was very, very lucky to have an amazing teacher. And I realise, you know, learning is a massive part of my life, designing learning and things. And I think it has come from the fact that I had a few really amazing teachers like Mrs. Coupland in my life at a quite a significant point.
It's interesting, isn't it, Joni, that actually when I listened to Joe, the subjects that I did really well in were actually about the teachers. I got on really well with these key teachers who made learning exciting and interesting and funny, and they were the subjects that I did well in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and sometimes, and they can crush you, a bad teacher, can't they? Even a subject you love. I can remember Mr. Ingram, if you're listening, he was a temporary English teacher we had, and he didn't like me at all. I mean, that's understandable, but I was a real nuisance, and I remember one detention, he made me stay behind to open and shut the window. So I stayed behind for 30 minutes and just had to do this old Victorian sash window up and down. Completely
that's
pointless.
Strange.
Yeah, bit of a bully. Yes. But he really put me off English for a while, which is a real shame, isn't it, if that's your passion, for someone to do that.
That you have a really negative association.
But the real golden ones are the ones, like you say, Donna, when perhaps you're not naturally that way inclined, and they can somehow bring out that maths brain or that science brain, only temporarily. And as soon as they've gone, you're hopeless.
Yes.
But while they're in your life, you think, I can do this.
Yeah, mine was biology. Yeah. I had a fabulous biology teacher. And did really well, you know, in biology. But other than that, if it had been a different teacher, I'm sure I wouldn't have done as well.
I had a Welsh, he was a physics teacher. And my grandmother's Welsh, so nothing against Welsh. But he was very, another one didn't like me because I just wasn't very bright, I suppose. If you're a teacher and you've got a child that's just not very bright and very competent, then that doesn't go down well. But I can remember I did appallingly in this physics exam. And he said to me, stupid, Joan Ellis, aren't you? You're stupid. And I thought, yeah, I suppose I am. But I went home and I thought, I am really going to show you that I am not stupid. I'm not stupid in any other lesson other than your lesson. So I'm going to show you. And I revised. I just sat in this chair and I revised for ages. It's a great big stack of books. And like Matilda out the film. And my mum used to say, you're just going to sit in that chair all day. You know, there's hoovering to do. I'm revising, mum. You know, like I'm headier planes. Anyway, I got 90%. Now, that complete fluke, it had just gone in. I retained the information for as long as I needed to get it down on paper for the exam. Now, completely gone, as Ian Mack will testify.
Absolutely.
You know, no technical, no physical, you know, physics brain going on here at all.
I'm always in awe of people that have got that ability to pull information back out from somewhere at the back of their mind. You can ask, you know, I've got a couple of friends, you ask them the question on quizzes, and they know it. Or they'll sit there and give me 5 minutes. And it's as though you can see in their brain, they're turning the pages.
Yes.
And they find it, and then it comes out. What a brain to be able to do all that.
I can remember tea rooms like that.
I can sniff
them out.
Charity shops, I can remember.
Yeah, you could put me in the middle of Cornwall, in the middle of the Isle of Wight even, and I could find any tea room from years back.
Absolutely.
You know? I think that's a valuable skill.
Absolutely. Coffee and cake.
Yeah. Are you a tea girl, Joanna?
I am, and actually it's funny you said that because actually in one of the installations that I've done that's called Remains of the Feast, I have this little animated video of someone having a cup of tea and a piece of cake at the Key Arts Cafe.
Oh, brilliant.
Because I think that actually is the kind of things people actually do remember.
Yes.
Because part of the show is pulling out things that I think might be future histories. And I know we sort of waved them aside as maybe being quite frivolous, and it's good to have a laugh about them as well. But sometimes those are things that really, really stick, and they are the things that are quite informative about the way we live now and what's important in our lives.
And talk about things that's sticking. Your pieces are made out of brown sticky tape, aren't they?
They are. It's a really strange combination of materials, and I don't talk about it that much about how I came about actually using those kinds of materials, but it was a really significant thing. I moved to university and I was the eldest of seven children.
Wow.
And so you can imagine that my home life was full of people. I love my brothers and sisters very, very much and spent a lot of time with them and did lots of things with them. And you can imagine our household as well, absolutely stuffed full of absolutely everything, incredibly busy. And suddenly the only thing I was doing was looking after myself. It was very, very odd. I remember having stale bread for the first time. I didn't realise bread went stale, because in our house, when you got bread, it literally went in 5 minutes.
Yes.
So there was a really difficult process of adaptation for me. And one of the first things that happened in our first term, they introduce you to lots of different kinds of things, just to see how you are. Will you fit in printmaking? Will you fit in painting? Will you maybe fit in sculpture? And coming from a school in Wales that didn't have... It was in Llanelli, actually. That's where...
Say that again. Go on.
Llanelli.
I know, amazing.
Southwest Wales. I went to my secondary school and then another one afterwards in Carmarthen. We made do with what we had.
Oh.
We didn't learn how to do bronze casting. I didn't know what latex was. I didn't know all these different things that people seemed to be able to be doing already in sculpture there. I just had this... But I wanted to make something, and the one thing I sort of remembered actually making was stretching paper with gum strip tape to make watercolour paper. That's a really cheap way of making watercolour paper that we were taught in our school. You know, you soak the paper, you soak the tape, you let it dry, you do your watercolour, your acrylic on top, cut the paper out, and then when you lifted up the gum strip tape to throw it away, I always was noticing it sort of kept the shape of the board or whatever else that you'd stretch the paper on. And I can't remember exactly why I started doing it, but I started making lots of little mugs and spoons and things like that out of this tape, because I think it was like the only thing I kind of knew how to use. And then I think I accidentally spilt somebody messy left some oil or something on a table I was using at the time, and it soaked it up, and I realised it was transparent, and instead of it looking like brown dead leaves, suddenly it took this transformative quality, and you could use it in light in different kinds of ways. And I just remember sitting in the corner making like loads of mugs and spoons and things like that, and realising actually at that point just how homesick I was for my brothers and sisters and how much I miss so many things about them. So it's a very intimate material for me at one level, because that's what that's rooted in. But at another level, it's become the material that I feel that I can work with in any way that I possibly can conceive, and you can, and so it's become more dramatic and more, and I don't say ambitious, but more extravagant, really. And in many ways, that's what's happened in the show. I've had a chance to go overboard, really, and make vignettes or scenes, or right down to the fact maybe like someone maybe just picks out a Marmite jar and just likes that as it is.
And I think, having had a sneaky peek of the show this time last week, where I was just blown away, because anybody listening, perhaps it's hard for them to visualise how brown sticky tape can be transformed into this beautiful space. You know, you've got pigeons resting in the rafters, haven't you? You've got a fish store with all these beautiful fishes laid out. You have got hands at work. It's just stunning. It's just lovely.
Thank you.
And all these myriad of tools hanging from the ceiling. So I would urge anybody, it would just blow your mind, anybody that goes to see that. It's just wonderful. Because when you were describing it to me, but when I first met you, I just can't envisage how this is going to work. And then when I went up, oh, wow, it's like my eyes had been newly opened. So definitely. And you've got a real pedigree behind you, haven't you? Because you've studied at the Royal College of Art. And
yeah, I was really, again, just really, really lucky. Again, really great teachers who we may have come from, you know, I came from a pure state school background. I didn't pass all my A-levels first time. I didn't pass all my O-levels first time. So I'm some, and I went to a foundation course in art. So I didn't go the normal kind of silver spoon track, as you might expect for someone to go to Oxford and maybe on to like one of one of the amazing art institutions that are here in this country. And it's one of the things, again, I like to try and pass on to people, that sometimes the, you know, hard work really does pay off, and you don't have to actually, to, in order to go to places that you know will give you wonderful opportunities, you don't necessarily have to get there really in super speed quick time. You know, take your time, get different kinds of experiences. I was like 21, 22 when I went to university. I was so glad. You know, I was used to being in the flat. I was used to looking after myself. I was, had seen a little bit of the world, not a lot, but a little bit of the world just about around Wales.
So, I'm just going to stop you there, Dan, because we need to go to a break. But please, I'm looking forward to talking to you both after the break, Donna Jones and Joanna Corey. So please join us when you'll be hearing much more from these wonderful, wonderful women.
Raise a laugh and raise some dosh for Vector's community radio to Go FM. Join them two fabulously funny females, Donna Jones, MBE, and Joan Ellis, for a special performance of their sellout show, Navy Knickers and Nick TVs.
Full of wit and glamour, a smashing occasion and a good laugh. Navy Knickers and Nick TVs is a mad, bad journey through lives littered with spelling tests, smear tests, mad mums and bad boys.
Join us Thursday the 26th of January, 7pm at the Riverside Centre, Newport. Entry just £5 and every penny goes to Vectors Community Radio.
Hello and welcome back to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and two artists, Donna Jones, MBE, and Joanna Corey. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Hello.
And before the break, we were talking about your exhibition that's happening at Key Art. It's next Saturday, is it?
Or it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow, yeah, wow, brilliant.
Opening is tomorrow, 1 till 3pm.
And everybody's, is that to the welcome. Public? Yeah.
Oh, it's completely open. Please come if you'd like to. And next Thursday, the nicely and conveniently 1 hour before your show starts in the Riverside Centre at 6pm, I'm doing a free artist walk and talk.
Oh, lovely.
So if you really want to make an evening of it, you can, and that's for free as well. So if you really want to make an evening of it, you can come over, listen to my talk, and then pop over and enjoy yourself at the Riverside Centre.
Is there a little glass of wine?
Well, I hope so. I'm looking forward to it. I probably need it to fuel me around the around the show.
It sounds fantastic. Going. And just tell us a little bit more. So you said it was over a year and a half in the making.
Yes.
Which doesn't surprise me when I see the quantity. Yeah. How many pieces?
Now, that was really good. The amazing, what I call Invisible Angels, who are the volunteer install team, who not only clean and tidied everything up yesterday in a way that I thought I was going to have to do it, and they did it. They're just been amazing for this 2 weeks. They actually also counted all the pieces.
Oh.
And I'd always sort of estimated around 1,000 pieces of sculpture, and it was 1,200.
Wow.
Yeah.
Goodness. That doesn't surprise me, having seen that. It's,
yes, I mean, some, it sounds like, that sounds quite crazy, doesn't it? It sounds like literally all I've done is fill the whole space with like 1,200 pieces. But they're collated into six installations. And each of those installations have a theme. So when you come in, there's one called Prime Vessels, then another one called Ale, Spirit and Song. Then on the right-hand side, we've got one called Friends of the Sea. Then the pigeons, it's called Saving the Building, which I'll, if you want to know, I can talk to you a little bit about it. Then there's the Veil of Raining Tools and Hands of Artists and Artisans around the corner. And then all the way through to the back, which is very beautifully lit, this sort of soft primrose glow. And that's holding an installation called Remains of the Feast, which is deliberately designed to feel quite archaeological, but has some quite funny things in it as well. Lots of island foods and things like that.
Brilliant. But we can't eat them, can we?
No, no. Damn it. No, you'll have to go downstairs to the cafe for that.
And how long is the exhibition on for? So it opens tomorrow.
Really long time. I was, again, Key Art's been really generous, because normally, you know, you'll have maybe like about 6 weeks for a show, whereas my show finishes 1st of April. So there's plenty of time for people to come over and have a look and wander around. And there's lots of associated events and workshops and things.
Yes,
associated with it as well. So,
and even actually pop back maybe more than once, because
yes,
I think it's one of those things, you look at it once and go back and see something again, don't you? Or you see something differently.
Well, the other thing is there's lots of little, this is the digital techie side, mm-hmm. I'm afraid, Joni. but it is fun. You might actually enjoy it. There's lots of little app codes. You know, the sort of app codes that you find on the side of food packages, and actually people put them on business cards and things now. And they're dotted all around the gallery. And I've given people links and instructions how to download a couple of free QR code scanners, you know, for your Android phone or for your iPhone, whichever you have. And people can then use that QR code scanner to scan these apps. And what you get is lots of lovely little surprises. So you can experience the show in a way that you want to, really. There's five beautiful evocative soundscapes that have not been designed by me. They've been designed by incredibly talented music students from Medina College. I would say visit it just to listen to what they've done. I was blown away this week when they sent them through. They were just fabulous.
So it's a multi-sensory experience.
Absolutely.
If you want it to be.
If you want it to be, there is sound, or you can look at little snippets of videos and animations which I've made, because if you're thinking about it as a potentially a future historical show, archaeologists, when they lay something out, or museums do, they're piecing and jigsawing things together, and it's up to you what story you make of it. So there are themes and stories behind each of the installations, but it's also up to you how you want to interpret it as well. There's just sort of lots of hints and possibilities there. When you're an artist, at the end, when you make a show, you have to let go of it. There's a lot of control up to the point of putting it up, planning it, designing it, and hanging it as well. But then you let go, and you let the viewers make of it what they will. You just have to put up with it, whatever they come back with, or not. They might be indifferent, who knows.
What's the most sort of provocative comment you've had to your work, would you say, in your career?
Actually, you know what, that sounds awful, but I go straight back to an experience in college which I had, which I just remember making me instantly completely furious, so furious that I threw the person out of the studio. I was at a stage where I knew I was experimenting quite a lot and making all sorts of quite small things in my studio bench, and someone came in and just said, "Oh, what is it you're doing? There's nothing going on. There's just bits of rubbish all over your table," and started sort of sweeping around in it and everything. And I literally just, it was like, you know, a tigress defending the cubs. It was like, "Get out!" I would say that probably it was the most provocative thing, and it made me realise that things that I was maybe focusing on or have decided to maybe concentrate on were important to me, and I felt like that should be respected, even if someone didn't really understand or treasure it or value it themselves.
And it's having that confidence, isn't it, to believe totally in what you're doing, and that you're doing it for a purpose. And if it's such a subjective thing, isn't it?
It is.
And you can't, if you changed your work according to everybody, you'd just land up with a terrible dog's dinner, and it would cease to be your work, which is what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Donna, what would you say is the most interesting comment you've had feedback on your artwork?
My grandkid could do better than that.
No. Really?
That's outrageous.
True, yes, yeah. Right, and it was about, you know, I was actually exhibiting some artwork and trying different ways of working. Joe and I have just been chatting about trying different styles, and some of it's illuminating, and you think, wow, I've hit on something very different, and the rest of it may go in the bin, but whatever. But it's a constant process of experimentation. And I still think, you know, so much of the general public have a certain view of what art is, or what art should be. And this chap came to the store where I was, you know, selling some of my work, and that was the comment that he made. And I said, well, you know, I hope that she can, because it means that she's, you know, got a certain eye and all the rest of it.
Good answer.
Very good.
But interestingly enough, I said to them, what you need to do, they were talking about Picasso, and I mean, I think he's absolutely he was a genius, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the different styles that he developed and different ways of looking at the world. Oh, that Picasso and all that sort of stuff. And I said, hang on a minute, right, in my good Yorkshire accent, you know. I said, wait, now then, hang on a minute. And I went, what you have to do is go back to the beginning. So somebody like Picasso, 11 years old, was a genius even then, in terms of the what he was able to draw and what he was producing, and obviously throughout the rest of his life. And a lot of the artists that were abstract or expressionistic artists were so talented in terms of their drawing abilities and their painting skills, but they looked outside of the box. And I think the problem with art particularly is that we're expected to stay in the box. And you dare put one foot out, you're sort of like crazy. And obviously people quote, you know, the Turner Prize has been an example of the world gone mad, and things like that. But it's funny because I have a saying now, when people say, what's that about? And I say, it's man's inhumanity to man. It could be anything, but I always come out with that comment because, you know, they're not being respectful. So I think, well, maybe I don't need to be respectful in return. But, art is a very different medium for what people expect you to be able to do.
But I think, I don't know, because it's so subjective, but once you've got your work out there, people feel they can knock it down, don't they?
Absolutely.
And yet, it's if it's speaking to you and if it speaks to one other person and gets a message across, then that's kind of not the job done, because it's not necessarily a job. It's up from your soul, isn't it, and from your heart.
But the other thing is, it's also about, it's got a historical place as well. So it's about, for a lot of people, what you're working on fits into maybe what's happening politically. So it fits in, you know, economically, politically, emotionally, and it's all about your perception of yourself in the world at that point in time.
Absolutely.
So the timelines, I always look at the timelines about a particular artist, what's going on around them during that period that they were doing that particular piece of artwork. Was it a reaction to some sort of political upheaval or social upheaval or even a personal upheaval in their life? And it's a way of communication. And what I say to people, art, like anything else, is a form of communication, whether it's dance, drama, literature. Art is communication.
And it's your own personal voice, isn't it?
It's absolutely
You're entitled. I know, like Joanna, we've just been talking about a number of pieces she produced for the exhibition, but you're a very prolific artist, aren't you? You're always working.
I'm always working.
You're always producing, and you stay up late at night, and painting after painting and sculpture after, you really turn the work
out. the two mediums for me are the art and writing and the poetry. And sometimes I'll explore whatever I'm doing or what's going on in my life through the art, or it could be through the poetry. So I can go backwards and forwards depending. But it was really interesting coming to the island because I'd done a series of paintings about disease and beauty. And you never see those two together. And so I'd done this series in 2003, 2004. And it was actually looking at, it was all at the time that Leslie Ash, if you remember, had the trout pout, you know, the filler in her lips. And it was all about that was happening, you know, big stuff was happening around Botox and fillers and all the rest of it. And on the other side, you know, a lot of my friends were starting to develop, and this sounds horrible, but breast cancer and various other, you know, physical things were taking place. And it was like, I couldn't reconcile the two things. And so what I did was I bought a medical book, because that's the only place I could find images of diseases. And I went into the university bookshop and bought lots of magazines, hair magazines and, you know, model magazines. And actually painted these beautiful faces and bodies and all the rest of it, but added on to it elements of disease. And interestingly, I managed to have a show last year at the Gasp Gallery in Southsea, because it felt, it was said that it was too radical for the island. Now, I don't know about you, Jo, but that's the bit that I struggle with about the island in terms of art, because again, it's about the box, you know, what's safe. You can go to a certain point, but beyond that, not on the island.
But I don't know who's making that decision, not on the island, because I don't necessarily believe that the island people think like that, and given an opportunity to see your work, I think they would have reacted very differently.
Because you saw it, didn't you?
Yeah, and I thought, it opened one's mind, it made me think, and just that juxtaposition, like you said, the beauty and the disease, that people shy away from. In, you know, it's all about the beauty in the magazine, doesn't it?
And what we have to supposedly live up to.
Yes, and concealing any sort of form that isn't quite right, isn't quite perfect, and seeking, you know, as you've said, the Botox and the cosmetic surgery, which now, isn't it interesting that back then when Leslie Ash did it, it was a huge uproar. Now people do it and nobody turns a hair, do they?
Not at all.
No pun intended. but, yeah, I think it's... It was a shame that it wasn't allowed. Well, why don't you bring it back to the island?
Because the galleries won't have it.
Yes, I think this. Donna's brought up a really relevant issue, that there are established galleries, and quite rightly, they're looking after their business or their particular speciality. I don't think there are many places on the island, really, if any, where you can truly say, like, this is a contemporary art space, this is something where you can explore, this is something which will be there for people to maybe, you know, try things out, but do it in a really professional way. People who are experienced on there, who've been doing it for a number of years, like Donna, who have established a progress and a pathway towards, you know, and want to actually keep in touch and engage with the contemporary art scene. I mean, you know, the only other option that I've been finding that a number of us are falling back on is being able to convert our own places of residence, if we've or finding spaces that we can put together where we can then do that ourselves. But then, of course, there's always a thing.
Money.
Yes, money. Absolutely. And then, you know, you fall back on, like I do, like, you know, I earn my own. And I fund my own art pursuits as well, because you can't always rely on funding either, because sometimes those are very the outcomes for funding often are really restricted as well. So it's quite tricky, I think, for artists, you know, of a certain at a certain level, to make sure they can maintain a really good standard and get those opportunities. It's a fantastic learning experience for yourself personally whenever you do have a show. It's not, I know a lot of people think it's all about, you know, wanting to get loads of attention, but actually, as Donna said, she couldn't have worded it more perfectly. She totally spoke my language when you said that, Donna. For me, art is not really about aesthetic. To me, art has always been a language, and, you know, learning about my craft or my industry, you know, learning about all different kinds of artists and doing the training was all, you know, a skill base to learn about the different kinds of language that I could use to communicate with people or decide not to. Keep it to yourself. That's all, also an option. So, yeah, there's things certainly that I'm looking into. It's a very real issue that Donna has brought up, and it's certainly something I'm looking to in the future after this show.
What about at the Riverside Centre? Is there any space you could hire there?
I'm sure there would be. I just felt a little bit demoralised, you know, sort of going to the actual galleries themselves and say, oh, no, you know, we wouldn't do that because obviously, you know, we've got a lot of tourists coming in the summer and, you know, and that you're talking about people spending £13,000 to £20,000 on a painting. And I know this because I went out for a meal last night with a friend of mine and he has just bought a £13,000 painting. From one of the galleries on the island.
Goodness me.
And I went, what? Wow. But it's a very traditional scene of Piccadilly Circus.
Yes. So then,
and Knightsbridge.
Then you land up becoming, you know, doing commercial art, don't you, in effect, in order to paint or make
boats.
Something that somebody's going to buy that you can effectively sell.
Boats and seascapes. But even boats and seascapes, I would look to do it differently. That's the thing.
Well, you've done boats, haven't you?
I've done boats. I can tick boats off. And I've done seascapes. I can tick that. And I've done flowers.
But,
Yeah, but there's a whole other side of what I do, which you know, often doesn't get seen.
And,
really.
And having to do, you know, would feel like a compromise, perhaps, would it?
Yes. Yeah.
For someone like you that produces that sort of strength of work.
But, you know, I love the idea what Jo was saying about maybe a group of us can do something that gives us permission.
Like a collective.
To exhibit some of our more challenging work.
Yeah,
a one-off. It's not offensive, it's not abusive. It's, it's a way of, you know, putting our experiences on paper or through sculpture or whatever medium we choose to do that.
And people have a choice whether they come, whether they stay and look. It's, you know, it's like going to the cinema, isn't it? You can walk out or you can choose not to go and see the film. It's all, it's art, so therefore it's a totally subjective medium, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And then, and unfortunately, though, that's even, you know, when I write books, but you sort of have to work towards what does your audience want.
And it's not just that as well. I'm going to be quite contentious here. It's about how the newspapers on the island, responds to that as well. I mean, there's been, you know, a whole series of letters gone in about the fact that they, you know, the island is having a pride event for lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender. And it was as though that was like the first time that's ever even been mentioned. You know, and there was outrage and, you know, one of the reporters was, you know, was seen to be quite offensive. And if that's happening in relation to the lesbian and gay community, then you can imagine how we could be perceived in terms of, you know, controversial art, for goodness sake, on the island. So it's not just the artists, it's about there's a culture on the island that has to change. It really has to open itself up.
Probably like anything, isn't it? It's one day at a time and baby steps, people moving towards something slightly different.
It is, and I think the fact that we're not a university island, one of the differences I found in Sheffield, we had two universities, so you're always having new ideas, and particularly from young people as well. This is a biggie for me. Obviously, if we look at what the art scene is on the island, it tends to be, I would say, 30-plus year old.
There's a gap.
You know, there's and people come to the island to retire to do their art.
Because to do it at a certain level, they have to go off the island, don't they, students?
Yes. And we've not got a university.
Which is a huge shame.
So from that point of view, we're not pushing the barriers, we're not pushing the boundaries, we're not challenging new ways of thinking, etc., etc. So that's, I actually think that's a difficult one, because I think in terms of the content of what is being shown on the island, it would not be seen as cutting edge.
But I don't know, but I think it's up to artists, writers to just keep gently, well, not in gently, it's, you know, pushing those boundaries, isn't it?
Yes.
It's up to us to move people forward and see what they will, what they're happy with. And I think as, you know, having worked in advertising and marketing, I know that people are happy to stay within their own boundaries. They don't like going outside their comfort zone. So if you ask people in general what they like, they're always going to say the thing that's familiar, most familiar to them. They're not going to pick the thing that's outside of that. So it's up to us to introduce that, I think, and say, actually, have you tried it? Yeah, I think you might like this. You might even prefer it to what you're used to. And that's, I think that's not just products, you know, as I know from my work, but it's through other things, and just gently saying, how about thinking in something in a totally different, you know, different way to how you have been, and look at this and look at that and look at the consequences. It's I think that's our responsibility in a way, isn't it?
It's interesting that you use the word gently do it. My feeling is that we have to think outside of the box and find a different way to raise the issues, because sometimes the gentle way of doing it doesn't work.
I suppose everybody's different, responds to different ways of doing it.
And there's been a number of occasions when, you know, we could have gone down the traditional route of, say, for example, writing letters of complaint. But in fact, we looked out of the box and chose something completely different, and that worked.
Yeah, well, you've got to be radical, haven't you?
Absolutely.
You've got to be radical sometimes. Well, it's been an absolute joy, and we've run out of time, and I can't believe it.
That's sad.
Yes, it is.
I've really enjoyed it, thank you.
You're just going to have to come back, aren't you?
I think I am.
So thank you so much, Joanna Corey.
Wonderful.
And the very best of luck with your show. You don't need my luck, because I know it's just going
to
be wonderful success. And I'm going
to
come back, and I'm going
to
bring people, because apart from shopping, I mean, that's just... it's part of your Saturday. Go in there, because it's just going to be an absolute joy. And Donna, as always, just lovely to have you here, and looking forward to getting on that stage with you on Thursday.
I can't wait to see both of you.
Have you got your costume sorted? Do you know what you're wearing?
It'd be something like you see the dogs on the beach wearing, you know, some sort of ridiculous thing.
Tutu?
Yeah, probably. So thank you so much for listening, and join me again next week when my special guest will be Bonnie McLaren, a trainee journalist at Isle of Wight County Press. Okay, have a lovely weekend. Thank you. Bye-bye now. www.vectisradio.com